Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. The disclosure this summer on the activities of the National Security Agency has spurred calls to constrain the agency's authority to conduct surveillance on Americans. The agency has been trying to calm the public storm by taking steps toward openness, with officials explaining that they operate lawfully and fix mistakes when they're detected. Marketing strategist Eric Holtzlaw argues that the mistake the NSA made wasn't the surveillance itself, but the spin. He's the CEO and founder of Laddering Works, a marketing and product strategy firm. His new book is Laddering, Unlocking the Potential of Human Behavior. And Eric, thanks for joining us on Dakota Midday.
Thank you for having me.
Well, what were your first reactions a couple of months ago when you first heard these reports about the NSA's activities?
Well, I mean, as someone that, you know, as a consumer and as a citizen myself, I was, of course, concerned that they were tracking all this information about us and that we didn't know about it. My kind of reserve, though, was we have companies that do that all the time. You know, companies are always tracking us, but there's a difference when you're on a company's website, you're in their store, or you're dealing with them on a one-to-one basis. You know they're collecting information about you. What the NSA did is this kind of umbrella collection across lots of different platforms and places. And that's an area that consumers, even when it comes to companies, are very wary about. They're not as open to allowing one company to share information about them to another company.
So they're okay with one company, but they don't want them to then take company A and then sharing that with company B and C.
Yeah, they find that creepy. So, for example, if I go and I book a trip somewhere to a city and all of a sudden I start getting hotel advertisements for that same city, but I didn't look up hotels, consumers are not okay with that kind of sharing. They don't want companies that they haven't had a relationship with in some type of transactional basis to start sharing information across to another company. So it's okay within that one company confine, but to share it across is something that consumers are still very wary of.
Why don't consumers like that? Why do they find it creepy? Does it seem say people are gossiping behind their back almost?
Yeah, exactly. It's very much like that. If you think about it, consumers actually see brands and other companies that they deal with almost as a friendly relationship. So they're brands that they choose to bring into their lives and participate in, and they say something about them. When that brand starts to do things outside of its bounds, and one of those would be telling another brand about you, it's sort of like your friend went and told something about you to someone else that you didn't want them to share. So consumers feel like their trust has been broken. And what we find with this NSA is that not only do we not know it's being tracked, but it was being tracked so broadly across so many different platforms in so many different ways that it's definitely feels like an invasion of our privacy and an invasion of, you know, what we expected in that relationship.
So going back to the NSA, you're arguing that people are generally okay with that. It's just that they didn't know that this was going on to begin with and what they're doing with the information.
I think that it would have done the NSA quite a bit of good to let us know that they were putting some type of program in place. And there's arguments that, well, if they said that, then the bad guys would all know that we have this program in place. You know, there's assumptions that you're tracking the information. I don't think that there was the assumption that it was so broad. And we as consumers, like with your credit report, you know that when you're making transactions, that's all ending up on your credit report. But you don't know how the financial institution then uses that credit report to make a decision about whether or not to lend you money at the end of the day. You can go view the information. It's that transparency that we're expecting. You know, what are you tracking? You know, it feels like it's mine. So if I'm being tracked, then what part do I have in that relationship?
Is it possible, though, in the case of the NSA, because they're dealing with government secrets and national security, is, you know, how open can they be regarding what they're doing and explaining to the American public how they're using this information?
Well, I think that, you know, Obama's last speech a couple weeks ago, where he started to talk about the fact that they were going to share at least what they're tracking, was a good step, you know, to let people know. You'll have, just like you can when you go look at your credit report or look at other information, like, for example, if you're on a website and you want to know what they're tracking about you, you can look at the history or the cookies of your browser to see what kind of information may be placed on your machine to keep up with who you are. The thing that the interesting part of that speech was the point where he said, you know, we could have done far worse. I don't think that helps, because consumers and citizens don't want to think, well, you know, you could do far worse with the information that you're tracking. They really want to see that as a relationship, and they understand it's for their benefit. I mean, we have to take off our shoes when we go through the line at the airport and our liquids out of our bags because of things that have happened, and we understand why. So just like you need to understand why about why a consumer buys from you as a company, your consumer also wants to understand why within the relationship they have with you.
So what would happen to a company that said that they're when they get criticism for collecting data to tell their customers, hey, we could do worse?
That would be terrible. That would be the worst thing a company could ever say. You know, companies really should only track the information they need to continue to benefit the relationship of the consumers that they're dealing with. There's this land grab for collecting as much data as possible about your consumers. And really and truly, your consumer only wants you to track the information about them that's necessary to that relationship. So, for example, if I go into a coffee shop every morning and I always order the same coffee, that brand should know what coffee it is that I order, but they don't need to know what kind of car I drive or where I live. Those are not important parts to that relationship. So consumers want data to be collected to make their lives more convenient. There's a large category of consumers who want that. There is a category that doesn't, and they should have the option, especially with companies, the ability to opt out and say, I do not want you tracking this information on me. But lots of consumers see this as a way to make their life more convenient. So if I show up at a store, I show up in an experience, the fact that you have this information is almost frustrating to me if you're not using it to make my life easier.
Does that break along generational lines?
The only place that it does that I've seen, most of the time when I do this stuff, I say the demographics don't matter. So it doesn't matter how old I am, how much money I have, any of those types of things. There is an interesting study I did around baby boomers, and the baby boomer generation does split into two groups. There is a pre-Vietnam War and a post-Vietnam War baby boomer. So when you look at that generation, you can't look at them as one group. You need to look at them as two. And the pre-Vietnam War baby boomer is much more privacy oriented and less likely to be using social media. That's the pre-Vietnam War, and then the post-Vietnam War baby boomer is participating in social media, but the reason they're participating is typically to stay connected to the people that kind of exist in their lives and have throughout. So most of the time, though, age doesn't matter, but for the baby boomers, you do have to look at those distinct groups.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking with marketing strategist Eric Holtzlaw, and his new book is Laddering, Unlocking the Potential of Human Behavior. He's also the CEO and founder of Laddering Works, a marketing and product strategy firm. I'm wondering, as we're in the internet age and all the data collecting that we're talking about, if that relationship between a business and the customer is changing, or is it still the same as it's always been? It's only the technological aspects that are changing.
Now, the relationship has changed dramatically. Around 2008, when we had the recession occur, a lot of people still blame the recession for some of the differences in the way that consumers function. And really, at the same time, we also received, you know, mobile devices, smartphones, and a ubiquitous internet, one that's available to us everywhere. And the consumer really is in charge of the conversation. They look for relationship with brands. They want to buy from someone. They don't want to be sold. And they are in charge of who they're going to buy from and how they're going to buy the product. And they use these devices they have with them. And every study that I do studies every month, there are more and more people moving to these kind of tablet and smartphone devices and using them to help make their lives more convenient and to be in charge of their own purchase decisions. So it's a return to kind of the concept of village that we had before we had mass media and mass production back over 100 years ago, where brands need to understand who their consumers are and really target and talk to those consumers correctly. The marketer is responsible for establishing that relationship, and then when they get to the location where they're going to make the purchase, the salesperson is really more of a transactional person, And that's a change. Marketing used to create a transaction. They would drive you to the store, and then it would be up to the salesperson to kind of move you across and establish that relationship. Those roles have dramatically reversed, and marketers are trying to figure out how to live in this new world.
And how difficult is that to figure out that new world and how to behave?
It isn't. The easiest thing you can do is you just go talk to your consumers. Just go talk to them. If you go talk to your customers, and you don't have to talk to that many of them, it's somewhere around 18 to 27 customer conversations, individual customer conversations, in which you start to learn the patterns of why customers buy from you. And then you can use that information moving forward. And you don't need to know everything about your customer. You only need to know three or four things about them as it relates to the context of what you're selling them. So if you're a bank and you're trying to convince people to come bank with you, you only need to know two or three things about that customer to get them to come bank with you. It's not everything. So marketers have tried to return to collecting as much data as possible so we can get back to the whole demographics Nielsen days, you know, where you knew the housewife who had 2.5 kids and drove a minivan is the one buying this product. It has nothing to do with her being a housewife or having 2.5 kids. It has to do more with some of the core drivers and what she thinks of that brand or that product and her overall ecosystem.
So as you've been saying, as I understand it, that the demographics don't mean what they used to.
No, not at all. Demographics don't mean. I do debates often against people who do demographics around the concept of demographics being dead. I mean, you know, there was an article in a TED Talk about Facebook being the end of gender and how people really don't view themselves in the ways that, you know, marketers taught us to see ourselves in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And it's more about our core drivers, what's driving us within a context to make a purchase or to, you know, to express something about ourselves. And if you understand those things, and there's only 10 or 12 markers that you need to know, and they're not all important to every consumer, and the way you know it is by talking to your customers. You can't look at quant data. You can't look at click streams. You can't look at the data you're collecting. You have to have a conversation with your customers, the right conversation, and you can start to understand the patterns very quickly, and then you can drive marketing messages and products that really work with those individual customers.
Is part of the problem with trying to market consumers, or maybe it's the opposite, maybe it makes it easier, just that consumers are grouping into these various niches?
Yeah, but the niches are not that different. People, we don't sort into demographic niches any longer. You know, neighborhoods are not built the same way that they used to be with all like people in one neighborhood. It's more about other tendencies. So there are groups of people who like to project. They like social media because it allows them to project. There's also groups of people who do not like to project. Those are two totally different groups. And if you try to use the same campaign to go after both of them, if you include social media sharing in a campaign for a group that doesn't project, and that happens to be your brand, so your brand is more of an in-person brand, then that's a waste of your time, and it may actually devalue your brand because your group doesn't like to share things. They don't project across social media. So you have to get down to what those factors are. There are not that many of them. You know, with demographics, there's 7 or 8 things that you need to worry about to cluster people. We just need to cluster people differently now than we have in the past.
Is this a scary time for businesses and marketers, or does it depend on how flexible they are to these changes that you're talking about?
I think if the marketer looks at it, the marketer right now has the opportunity to really take the driver's seat in their company. They can drive the products that are being built, the services, the way the marketing messages are being crafted, and they can truly understand who their consumer is and what their consumer wants. I love kind of these transitional times and times where there's a lot of change. It's just a matter of getting outside the boardroom and getting outside of your walls of your office and talking to your customers and understanding what's really important to them and what those patterns are. And you have to do it by not starting with your product. So you don't go out and say, hey, I'm such and such and I sell this product. You have to first understand what's important to them and then understand how your product or service fits within their world. And that gives you the keys to what you want to do. I've done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these projects with companies in which they've brought me a product or service that was failing. And it was because they had a gross assumption. There was some hypotheses they had created in a boardroom. And when I went out and talked to, like I said, just a small number of their customers, we could disprove it, and then we could quantify that was why the product wasn't working the way that they expected.
You said this is a transitional time, which is kind of exciting, but it almost seems like that those transitions, that things are changing constantly.
Yeah, things are changing constantly. What happens, though, is, you know, we got the internet was introduced in the 90s, and then what happened to the world, which is such a dramatic change right now, is that we had the Great Recession in 2008. Social media was introduced about the same time, and the ability to use smartphones and mobile everywhere, those all came on the scene almost at the same time. Typically, we don't see that much disruption in technology happen at once. So you'll have something new come in, you have to figure out how consumers and businesses are reacting to that, and then you can move forward. Well, the Great Recession sort of became the red herring. It's the thing that hid what happened to the consumer during that time frame. And marketers are still paying attention to, oh, you know, it's the Great Recession, that was the problem. Well, there were all these other kind of disruptive technologies that are still kind of filtering their way through what the consumer does and what the consumer cares about.
Eric Holtzclaw is the CEO and founder of Laddering Works, a marketing and product strategy firm. His new book is called Laddering, Unlocking the Potential of Human Behavior. And Eric, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
Thank you so much for your time.